D-Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, Nick Frazier here with you. Willie Donick and David Janes out today, as you heard in that update from Nick Frazier. Still nothing on the Predators front in NHL free agency. Not that we are totally surprised by that, but we will keep you updated on any and all moves that the Predators make. Friend of the show, Elliot Freeman, reporting just a couple of minutes ago that former Predators forward Tanner Jeannot signing a 5-year deal with the Boston Bruins with a $3.4 million cap hit. The Nashville Predators still dining out on that trade of Tanner Jeannot to the Tampa Bay Lightning from a couple of years ago. Had a first-round pick in the draft on Friday as a result of that Tanner Jeannot deal. But Tanner Jeannot off to Boston, 5 years with a $3.4 million cap hit. So we will keep you abreast. That's a good word. Keep you abreast. Grow up, everybody who's snickering. Of the goings-on in NHL free agency, especially when it comes to, of course, the Predators. But the question that I pose to all of you before we talk to Tim Hasselbeck: are the Tennessee Titans the most anonymous franchise in the NFL? And this was inspired by two things. The first, George Kittle being one of the celebrities to announce the Predators' first-round draft pick on Friday. And Gentry Estes of the Tennessean tweeted this, quote, "Does anyone else think it's strange that the NFL player who is most commonly associated with Nashville's NHL team, enough to be selected to announce the Preds pick during the first round of the draft, plays for the 49ers and not the Titans?" So that was the first thing that inspired me. The second thing was a story on Pro Football Talk by Mike Florio. He did a list of coaches on the hot seat. And then he had a separate headline, "Is Brian Callahan on the hot seat in 2025? And this is the lead of the story. Quote, "I was talking to my son last night about the recent PFT list of the 5 hottest coaching seats. Said my son, quote, "Is Brian Callahan on it?" Said I, quote, "Shucks." Instead, not shucks. So this was not a situation where Mike Florio was putting together his list and thought long and hard about putting Brian Callahan on it and decided not to. It sounds like Mike Florio legit forgot about Brian Callahan. So with those two things in mind, are the Tennessee Titans the most anonymous franchise in the NFL? Andrew from Murfreesboro, he called the team that I think is a close second. He said, "Yes to the Titans being the most forgettable franchise, but a close second, I would say, is the Arizona Cardinals. Can any of y'all name the Cardinals head coach? I sure can't." That's Andrew in the borough. Is it Jonathan Gannon?
Jason was doing this exercise, I think, last
week.
It
is Jonathan Gannon.
There you go.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Here's another for you, Adam. And it's right up your wheelhouse, and you may not even like it.
Mm.
Your very own New Orleans Saints. But they are there. They don't, don't try it. Don't try to make it seem like your team is relevant. They're not. Outside of Carr retiring, and now they are probably more than likely about to start the rookie out of Indiana.
Tyler Shuck out of Louisville.
Tyler Shuck out of Louisville. They're looking to start him as their quarterback in the season opener. Who is their coach?
Kellen Moore.
Yeah, Kellen Moore. He got the job. Yeah. See, I didn't even know that. So they are there too.
The Saints could be in the running for this right now. I guess it depends on whether or not you are looking at history, or if you're solely looking at right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because certainly right now, the New Orleans Saints could be in the running for this unfortunate title of NFL's most anonymous team. But historically, they certainly wouldn't be.
First player to come to mind with the New Orleans Saints. First player. Boom. Right now.
Drew Brees.
See?
You mean?
That tells you right there.
Are you meaning historically or right now?
No, I'm just saying right now.
Oh, okay. Alvin Kamara.
That's it. Alvin Kamara. Maybe Taysom Hill. Olave. So that's Three guys, really two.
Cam Jordan.
Yeah, Cam Jordan, yeah. But I think he's
Tyrone Mathieu?
Nah, no. No. They're like the Titans. They are just like the Titans. Believe me. They are the Titans of the NFC.
Okay. That's fair.
Because you name a couple of players for them, and I can name a couple of players for the Titans.
Well,
we can't name the quarterbacks because they haven't proven anything yet, but I think I have the upper hand.
You might
because
be at
they
a,
have the first pick in the draft.
You
with
might
Cam
be
Moore.
At a slight advantage because, you know, you live here and you played for the franchise. So, yeah, you may be able to
so
name
I may
some
be
Titans
biased,
players.
Huh?
One texter says the Atlanta Falcons.
No, I don't think – I think Atlanta is a rising team.
Mm-hmm. But what, let's form what the main factors are.
Exactly.
Star power is a big one.
Atlanta has that, I believe.
Somewhat. Would you say Bijan Robinson?
Yeah, Bijan Robinson. No, not Michael Penix, but they do have star power, Bijan Robinson. And the tight end, what's his name?
Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, Kyle Pitts. He's a household name, I believe. He's one of the best, better tight ends in the National. One of the best, if he can ever get everything, you know, on a consistent basis with him.
I think the NFC South is filled to the brim with anonymous franchises. The Texans, I think, have graduated from this for a moment just mm-hmm. because they've been winning the division. They've been in the playoffs, so people have seen them, although I believe they play the early Saturday game every year they're in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So, but the Colts, Jaguars, and Titans, I think you could probably all lump into that category.
No, you can't put the Colts in that category for whatever reason. For whatever reason, the Colts are always talked about.
That is true.
And for no other reason.
The Anthony Richardson thing mm-hmm. is going to keep the Colts in the news.
Yes.
So there's that. I guess the question is, how much are we factoring franchise history into
okay.
this? Like, are we looking at this from a historical perspective? I should have probably figured this out before debuting this topic. Are we looking at this from an historical perspective, or are we looking at this from the here and now?
I think you got to look at it from the here and now. Because
okay.
if you look at it from a historical standpoint, New Orleans is irrelevant.
Yes.
You know, because they've won a championship. You look at some of these other teams. Indianapolis, they are relevant. They've won a championship. Who else we had, you know, in that sort of list? The Arizona Cardinals. They've been to a Super Bowl.
I think the Cardinals
had a few years here and there.
I think the Cardinals could give the Titans a
yeah,
run.
They could.
For their money in mm-hmm. the most anonymous franchise sweepstakes.
But that's yeah, and so I mean,
I think we're talking
about the here and now.
I somehow remembered that Jonathan Gannon coaches the Arizona Cardinals. I know they have Kyler Murray.
Mm-hmm. They have Harrison.
They've got Marvin Harrison Jr. They've got mm-hmm. James Conner at running back.
Mm-hmm. That's
don't forget about Trey McBride, tight end.
That's right. He got paid
stud.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Didn't Calais Campbell go back to Arizona?
I'm not sure. I can look.
So I know more Arizona Cardinals players than I thought. Maybe I should remove them from this. Yes, Calais Campbell is back with mm-hmm. the Arizona Cardinals. So... yeah, the Cardinals were, to Andrew from the Burroughs' point, the Cardinals were the first team that came to mind. If not the Titans, then who? The
yeah.
Cardinals were the first team that came to mind.
I think I would guess.
I think market also plays into this as well. Like, the Los Angeles Chargers mm-hmm. are not a team that is front of mind for a lot of people, but they do play in Los Angeles, and they have a star quarterback.
Well, the Chargers have always been.
And they have a well-known coach.
Yeah, the Chargers have always been this way. They've been the best sort of, not forgotten team, but the best team that you sort of put on the back burner for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it has to do with history because they've had their opportunities. To put themselves either in a position to win a Super Bowl. They got mollywopped by, I think it was San Fran that year. They went to the Super Bowl. Was it San Fran? If I can remember, it may have been San Fran. But they got beat down by them. And then when they had LaDainian Tomlinson, They had who was the quarterback then?
Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, Phillip Rivers. They had this basically all-star team and end up losing to the New England Patriots in the AFC Championship. So the Chargers have been that team that they've been good, but people don't talk about them as much because it's like, okay, yeah, you talk about them, but then they end up disappointing you. And now that their division has gotten much harder, even with having, you know, Jim Harbaugh there, it's still a division with who? The Kansas City Chiefs.
I'm looking at the teams by division. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of the teams in the AFC East are in the running for this.
No.
Not Buffalo, not Miami, not New England, and not the New York Jets. In the AFC North.
New England was close. They were close.
There's still that, like, any time that Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson get mentioned, remember mm-hmm. when we talked a lot about Jordan Hudson, but she's still floating around there. It's New England Patriots adjacent, so that keeps the Patriots in the news. So I would eliminate any of the teams from the AFC East. In the AFC North, Ravens, they do not qualify. The Bengals do not qualify. The Browns, they make headlines all the time. And the Steelers. So I wouldn't include any of those teams. The AFC South may be home to the most anonymous franchises in the NFL. In the AFC West, Broncos, Chiefs, Raiders, Chargers, I wouldn't put any of those teams in that category. Same with the teams in the NFC East, Cowboys, Giants, Eagles, Commanders. I would say the same thing for the NFC North, Bears, Lions, Packers, Vikings. So to me,
The AFC South and AFC North are battling, or is it the AFC South?
I think it's the AFC West. I think it's the AFC South and the NFC South.
Yeah. That's what, yep.
Falcons, Panthers, Saints, and Bucks.
Yeah, and you got to figure, man. Nobody, as you know, history is on your side because your team has won a championship, but nobody's talking about the Saints and nobody's talking about the Carolina Panthers.
Right. If I had to put a team behind the Tennessee Titans right now, it would be the Arizona Cardinals. I never think about the Arizona Cardinals, despite the fact that I know a lot of people associated with the Arizona Cardinals for some reason. But it just goes to show you where the Titans are right now. We all hope that Cam Ward becomes a superstar, and we're not having this conversation anymore. One texter says, anonymous is the wrong word. Irrelevant is the word you're looking for. The Titans are the most irrelevant franchise in the NFL. You can use anonymous, forgettable, irrelevant.
I don't think they are. Again, I would put Carolina ahead of them. I would put the Saints ahead of them. And then it's Arizona and then the Titans.
So remember a few years ago when the Titans went viral for their NFL schedule reveal video mm-hmm. where they were just talking to people on the street on Broadway and they had no idea what any of these team logos were. I watched it a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. It just showed up on my feed. Still hilarious a couple of years later. If you did a man on the street type interview of people on Broadway and you said, name one player who plays for the Tennessee Titans right now, who do you think would be the first player that comes to mind? I don't think it would be Cam Ward. It might be Cam Ward, actually. But I bet there would be a lot of people who would still say Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be. To me, it would be either Derrick Henry or Cam Ward, one of the two. And that in itself, you know, is bad when there's still good players amongst this team. But when we start to think, when we think about the Tennessee Titans and you put somebody on the spot and you say, first player to come to mind, unfortunately, I think it's going to be Derrick Henry or Cam Ward, fortunately for Cam Ward. But, you know, they have, I mean, Calvin Ridley and I'm just talking offense. And that's the part. They don't have enough guys that, listen, you don't need to be a household name because that's only for the, you know, so few. There's about 10 guys, 15 guys, I think, across the board that are more household name, and you can break it down by position and leaving the offensive lineman out, because you could be an all-pro or pro bowler and people still don't know about you because you play on the offensive line or at times the defensive line. But you – it's like those players, and when you start naming those players, the household players, even if once you get past 25, 30, a Titans player is not going to show up. They're just not.
One texter says, Josh from Murfreesboro says, I think Carolina is more relevant, quote unquote, than the Titans because they're so bad. They're easier to laugh at, meaning the Carolina Panthers are easier to laugh at than
Wouldn't
the Titans.
Wouldn't the Tyson
Titans
be easier to laugh at, too?
I don't know.
Though I don't put the Titans at last on that list.
Sometimes when you're just trying to fight back tears, all you can do is laugh. And that's how I kind of feel watching the Tennessee Titans right now. It's just like, it's the least we can do is just try to laugh through this terrible, terrible season and hope that it doesn't happen again.
And again, you don't need to have six or seven household names on your roster. It would be great, but we know it's just not like that in sports across the realm. But you got to have guys that are high impact guys. And, you know, in order to have a successful offense, you got to have at least two or three of those guys, I believe, high impact guys. And on defense, I think it has to be the same. But you do have to have those guys underneath them that are playing at a really good level as well. So, and the Titans, they haven't consistently had that over the last 3 years.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on if you think the Titans are the most anonymous franchise in the NFL. 615-737-1025. Still nothing from the Nashville Predators in NHL free agency. The market opened at 11 a.m. Still waiting for the first move to be reported by the Nashville Predators. That has not happened. Not much has happened since the last time I updated you, but I will keep you up to date on all things NHL free agency. We'll see if the Predators have something up their sleeves. But speaking of the Predators, coming up next, although the Predators haven't made any signings today, today is sort of an important day for the Nashville Predators. It may not make a lot of you happy, but nonetheless, we'll discuss. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Still nothing on the free agent front for the Nashville Predators. Here's what I find hilarious about the NHL, Derek. And I know it's different because the NHL has a hard cap. But Mitch Marner, who was the top free agent available, he signs with the Vegas Golden Knights. He's making $12 million a year. And then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander signs a four-year, $285 million Supermax contract, the richest annual salary for a player in NBA history. So I just think it's funny comparing the two. By the way, shout out, Luke Kornet getting the bag. Former Vanderbilt big man Luke Kornet. Four-year deal worth $41 million, leaving the Boston Celtics and joining the San Antonio Spurs. So, Luke Kornet.
Hey, every go time for I it, watch man. Luke, he was balling.
Is his mom still on the news?
I think she is.
Why?
Tracy?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Tracy, if you're listening.
She wanted to do her own
kick
thing.
Kick your feet up.
She probably still is kicking
Luke's
her feet up.
Luke's got you covered, man. Well, not man. Ma'am.
Best believe. She's like, listen, I don't expect my son to do anything. So she's going to keep on doing her thing. But I think Luke brings a presence that I think San Antonio needs, another big fella, because Wemby, you know, he's been injured, and, you know, hopefully he comes back and he's fully healthy this upcoming season. But you got to have someone that has been on a championship team. He was on their Boston Celtics championship team 2 years ago. And he played played some key minutes in that championship game, and balled out. So good for Luke. He deserves it, man.
So nothing has happened with the Nashville Predators so far on July 1st. 1 year ago today, we were celebrating the signings of Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault and Brady Shea. The Predators spent more money than any other team in free agency last year. Or at least on July 1st. Mm-hmm. But something else also happens today. UC Soros's 8-year contract is officially underway. It has taken effect, which also means that UC Soros now officially has a no movement clause. For the next 6 years, 6 of the 8 years on this deal, UC Soros has a no movement clause in his contract. So for those of you who were begging and pleading, Barry Trotz, please find a way to get out of this deal before July 1st. Jared leading the way on that. Sorry about your damn luck, to quote James Storm. That's not going to happen. UC Soros, day one of that 8-year contract, $7.74 million cap hit. And as we discussed the other day, Derek, talking about Barry Trotz and how we would evaluate him so far as Predators GM, I said that the Yaroslav Askarov trade would be the litmus test for Predators fans on how you feel about Barry Trotz. I think you can combine the two, the UC Soros extension and the Yaroslav Askarov trade, which was a result of that extension. How you feel about Barry Trotz as a GM, I can probably tell based on how you feel about those two moves together. So, UC Soros, this is day one of his 8-year contract, which he signed 1 year ago today because he was eligible for his extension 1 year ago today. He just finished the final year of his previous contract. But today, Derek Mason, day one of the UC Soros 8-year contract.
Judgment day has begun.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Precisely.
There we go. Judgment day starts today. He will be judged, even though, you know, I'm sure many of you have, you know, judged him even before the contract started. But yeah, it starts now. And you know, listen, whether I'm going to channel my inner Willie, because, you know, as the salary cap goes up, this contract will end up being a good contract. If UC Soros, you know, gets back to form, I think it'd end up being more than a good contract. I think if he gets back up to form, he'd be underpaid moving forward. That's just my opinion on that. But it's yet to be seen because last season wasn't good for anybody, and let alone the goalie. And, you know, I try to give him some grace because the guys in front of him from a defensive standpoint wasn't doing their job, but yet and still – we've seen UC Soros play at a high level consistently, even when he didn't, you know, nights he didn't have, you know, good defense in front of him. I'm talking about in the past, prior to last season. So that's what people expect when UC Soros is in between the nets, and rightfully so.
Joey from Bellevue says, Adam, James Storm is my son's mom's cousin.
Son's mom's cousin. Okay.
All right. Big James Storm fan when he was in TNA Wrestling, which launched right here in Nashville, Tennessee. So, UC Soros, it's complicated.
to say the least, huh?
Yeah. So as Jared has termed it, the Station Civil War of 2024, the Avengers, which consisted of you,
yes,
Willie, and Ian, as I understand it, versus the anti-Avengers. I'm not, it may come as a shock to you. I'm not a huge Marvel Cinematic Universe person.
Yeah.
So I don't know who the Avengers are going up against, but the villains in this.
They're DC. Just to say they're DC. We'll make them the villains.
That's fine.
Yeah.
The villains, those against UC Soros, Jared, Caroline, Robbie,
yes,
Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I was also on that side. For me, it was more about the contractual timelines. Because when UC Soros broke into the NHL, Pekka was nearing the end of his NHL career. So the contractual timelines lined up where it was going to be a smooth transition from Rene to Soros. That was not going to be the case here because Soros was about to sign a big contract and Yaroslav Askarov was ready to transition to more of a full-time NHL role. So I thought for that reason, the Predators should move on from Soros. I also thought in order to take that step back, they should move on from the more proven goalie and take a shot on the first-round goaltending prospect. So I wasn't leading the charge against UC Soros like Jared.
But you were there.
But I was there. I was there. So
I saw a sword in your hand.
The timing of the worst season of his career could not have come at the worst, time. Because we knew that he was about to start this contract, and last season we know was abysmal for everybody on the Nashville Predators. But UC Soros, knowing that that 8-year contract was coming, put up the worst season of his career, a .298 goals against average and an .896 save percentage.
Now, okay, can I be a
devil's advocate?
Yeah, or a contrarian. UC Soros
supporter?
Supporter. Or
defender.
Defender, exactly. Wouldn't it be, and listen, I get it, and I'm just throwing it out there, and the minute I said, I know it sounds crazy, but it is what it is, because I wouldn't want it. But wouldn't you rather have him have his worst season of his career all while all those other guys are having a worst season of their career? So you could say, well, it really wasn't as much of UC Soros than it was those other guys.
You must be wearing some rose-colored contacts. Derek Mason.
I'm trying here. I'm trying.
It's
but I admitted it.
Right. Difficult. It's difficult to defend the play of UC Soros. And look, in the next segment, I'm going to try to play both sides here. And criticizing UC Soros, but also attempting to defend UC Soros and the Predators. Because I do think there are ways that you can go about doing it. But with all of the other moves that the Predators made, because remember, this contract, this 8-year contract, the Predators and UC Soros agreed to it 1 year ago today, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was overshadowed by the free agent moves, but the Predators signed UC Soros long-term. So it was essentially a 9-year contract because you had the 1 year left on the contract that just expired and the 8 years coming up again, day one today of the UC Soros contract. And I agree with Jared, he said this quite a bit, that Barry Trotz's job security is going to be influenced significantly by how that UC Soros contract ages. So 615-737-1025, our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Today is day one of the UC Soros 8-year contract. It has officially taken effect, a $7.74 million cap hit, a no movement clause until, let's see, 6 years from now. So that would be 2031? Yikes. 615-737-1025. How are you feeling about the UC Soros contract on the first day of said contract? And will Barry Trotz rue that decision? 615-737-1025. Coming up next, I'm going to both sides this a little bit. I'm going to offer some criticisms, but also attempt to defend the Predators and UC Soros. Let's see how well I can do. 615-737-1025. Tune into ESPN 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on Memphis. Pregame begins at 6:20 p.m. and the first pitch is at 6:35 p.m. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure.
Could you trade UC Soros? Is he still tradable way down the road there? So what do we think about specifics? I don't know if that's out there or anything, if you've heard anything along those lines, but what would you speculate?
I haven't heard any specifics, but I can tell you what I think is going on here. And I will confess, I could be proven to be wrong because I don't know 100%.
You wrong? Come on. Yeah. You're not wrong.
It happens. This is what I think it is. First of all, what teams usually do, and in most cases this does happen, there are some where it doesn't, what teams usually do is they will say, look, you have to give me an out on the back end. If things go south on the back end or we need to move you for cap reasons or something like that, you have to give me an off ramp. And in most cases that does happen. There are some where it doesn't. So I would bet when all is said and done and this contract is filed, we'll see that he has some pretty strict no-trade protection for at least the first half of the contract.
That was Elliot Freeman on our show 1 year ago tomorrow, July 2nd, 2024, reacting to the UC Soros trade. UC Soros indeed has some strict trade protection, a full no-movement clause in the first 6 years of his contract, which is officially underway July 1st, 2025, the first day of UC Soros' eight-year contract with the Nashville Predators. Evan on our text line, driven by Wilson County on Day.com, says, T-minus 2,920 days till Soros is gone. He's not worth the money. It is too small and sucks. That was the start of Barry Trotz being a terrible general manager. Again, the UC Soros contract and the Yaroslav Askarov trade that resulted from that UC Soros contract, to me, is the litmus test for Barry Trotz. How you feel about how Barry Trotz is as a GM depends on how you feel about those two moves, which kind of happened in concert. So, look, I'm going to attempt to play both sides of this. And there might be some stretching involved. But I'm going to attempt to play both sides of this. So let's start with a positive for UC Soros. UC Soros makes $7.74 million against the cap. That will be the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, the ninth highest cap hit in the NHL next season. Earlier today, Thatcher Demko of the Vancouver Canucks signed a new contract that will pay him $8.5 million per season. That will take effect in 2026-2027. So as of now, not this coming season, but the season after, Soros will be the 10th. I had to do my counting so it wasn't just silent there. The 10th highest paid goalie in the NHL by cap hit. So in terms of the money that the Predators are allocating to UC Soros, in the grand scheme, not too bad. Here are the goalies, by the way, who will make more money either this coming season or the following season. These goalies will be making more money than UC Soros. Igor Shesterkin with the New York Rangers. Sergei Bobrovsky with the Florida Panthers. Andrei Vasilevsky with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Connor Hellebuck with the Winnipeg Jets. Not this coming season, but the season after. Thatcher Demko of the Vancouver Canucks. Jeremy Swayman of the Boston Bruins. Jake Ottinger of the Dallas Stars. Ilya Sorokin of the New York Islanders. And Linus Ullmark of the Ottawa Senators. All of those goalies will make more money per season than UC Soros, either starting this coming season or, in the case of Demko, the 2026-2027 season. So that's the first thing in favor of UC Soros. His cap hit is not that bad.
Yes, and that's what I'm channeling my inner Willie Donick here. And that's what Willie was talking about. But even with that, if he doesn't, you know, get back to the level that we've seen him play, where, you know, he's a Vezina finalist, if he doesn't get back to that level, it doesn't matter how much you're paying him, he's not going to be worth it. You know, so whether this, a lot of it depends on UC Soros. If he plays well, then this is a great contract because ultimately he will be underpaid. If he doesn't play well, this is a horrible contract because you're not paying somebody $7 million and their goal percentage or stop percentage is 90 or below.
You're okay, CC on our text line leads me to my next point. How many playoff series has he won?
Yeah.
He's won zero. That's a knock against UC Soros. He's played in three playoff series. Here's the sunny side up version of that. How many of those playoff series losses would you blame on UC Soros? I can think of one. Against the then Arizona Coyotes in the COVID bubble in August of 2020.
Hey, Adam, how many goals did, what was the last series they had?
Against Vancouver.
How many goals did Vancouver? What was that goal discrepancy? It was like 11 to 12,
UC Soros allowed 12 goals in six games
and
against the Vancouver
Canucks.
And they
scored 11.
I think that's right.
Not all on UC.
That would be my contrarian point to, well, he hasn't won a playoff series. Well, how many playoff series would you blame him for? Against the Carolina Hurricanes in 2021, he had a 921 save percentage in that playoff round against the Carolina Hurricanes. in back-to-back games in that series when the Predators were down 2-0 and tied the series with two wins at home. He stopped 110 of 117 shots. That's a .940 save percentage. So again, that's the contrarian view that, yes, he has not won the playoff series, but how many of those series can you blame him for? I think you can really only blame him for one of the three. And remember, he did not play against the Colorado Avalanche in 2022 because he was injured late in the season. That was a combination of David Rittich and Connor Ingram in net. So again, this is me. I'm trying to play both sides here. UC Saros has been in decline in recent seasons. His peak was in 2021. He had a .228 goals against average and .927 save percentage that season in 36 games. In 2023, he had a .269 goals against average and .919 save percentage. Over the past three seasons, his save percentage has gone from .919 to .906 to .895. Mm-hmm. His goals against average has gone up from .269 to .286 to .298. Again, last season was the worst season of UC Saros' career.
And that's why I say, no matter if you're making $7 million or $77 million, if the job isn't getting done, it's going to be a bad contract regardless. But if he's back to that or closer to that peak form where he's his save percentage isn't under 90, then whatever you're paying him is going to be about right, and people are going to look at the contract as being a good contract.
So Matthew in Nashville says, so hypothetically, if Staro stinks up the joint next season, the cap hit if the Preds cut him isn't too horrible? Okay. I've decided to look up what happens if the Predators were to buy out UC Saros before the start of the 2026-2027 season. Derek, would you venture to guess how long the Predators would have to pay UC Saros if they bought out his contract after next season?
After next season, so they still would have what, seven seasons left?
But there you.
But you pro. It's like you push it out further than
if
that.
If the Predators were to buy out UC Saros after this
season,
the
next 10 years,
they would be paying
years?
Him until 2040.
Wow.
Because I believe it's double the length of the remaining contract. Okay. So that would be 14 years if my math is right. Mm-hmm. So yes, the Predators would save, to answer your question, Matthew, if the Predators bought out UC Saros, they would save roughly $5 million against the cap in 2026-27.
But and then they got to go pay somebody else.
And then it fluctuates. So, but the idea of paying UC, so that's some Bobby Bonilla type stuff. Also, happy Bobby Bonilla Day to everybody. And we will talk to noted Mets fan Teron Davenport in a couple of minutes. We'll talk to him about Bobby
Bonilla. Is Bobby Bonilla Day?
It is.
Oh, wow.
As Matthew says, it would be our own Bobby Bonilla. That's absolutely right. One texter says, look at the starters for the defense last year. I can't hold that against Saros with Twinkle Toes Justin Barron back there. One texter, Joel from Woodbury, says, most of the blame should be on the lack of good defensemen. Saros got worse after Ekholm was traded. So that, again, let's play both sides of this. Mm-hmm. Because when I would attempt to defend UC Saros this past season, I would always point out the goal support. He did not get goal support. Think of a pitcher not getting run support. Same thing. UC Saros would lose games that he probably should have won because the Predators couldn't score goals. And as the texter notes, the defense was an absolute mess. 15 different defensemen suited up for the Nashville Predators last season, tying a franchise record. Mm-hmm. So that would be my attempt of defending UC Saros. Here's the flip side, as Jared likes to say. Well, if the goalie is dependent on the defense in front of him, why are you paying the goalie? Pay more, better defensemen, and then stick a Scarbini back there. So that would be the counter argument. So one texter says, why are NHL contracts so long? Can they not do 3 or 4 years like the NFL? Well, I mean, that's Wes in Clarksville. Well, Wes, they can. And by the way, in the new collective bargaining agreement, which takes effect, not this coming season, maybe the season after, the contract lengths are going to be subtracted by one. So right now, if you re-sign with your team, you can sign for up to 8 years. Mm-hmm. If you leave your team and sign with a new team, you could only sign for a max of 7. In the new CBA, it's going to subtract by 1 year. So players re-signing with their clubs could only sign for 7 years, and players signing with new teams can only sign for six. So teams, players can, Wes, sign for 3 or 4 years, but a lot of players like to get max term for that security. But that, see, me, that's me playing both sides of the UC Soros argument. Mm-hmm. So, look, this, you know, UC Soros, regardless of which side of the aisle you sit, when it comes to UC Soros, he was bad last season. There's no doubt about it. And he needs to be absolutely 100%, 200%, 300% better if the Predators have any chance of bouncing back. But the Predators' decision to re-sign UC Soros to an 8-year contract, that was a big one. As I've been saying, that's sort of the litmus test for me for how you feel about Barry Trotz as a GM in the NHL, how you feel about the decision to re-sign UC Soros and in tandem trading Yaroslav Askarov. But again, day one of UC Soros' new contract, his no-movement clause is officially locked in. So if UC Soros wants to go anywhere, it's all up to him. I doubt that's going to happen. 615, at least right now. 615-737-1025. Still nothing on the free agency front for the Nashville Predators, although the market has now been open for almost 2 hours, a huge difference from this day 1 year ago. But we will continue to update you on any moves the Predators make. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will join us next. We'll talk about Bobby Bonilla Day with the New York Mets fan, Teron Davenport, as well as get into the Tennessee Titans as well. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game.